Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
Happy Throwback Thursday, everybody.
I hope you're having a great week, everyone.
I'm having a wonderful week. Kevin, how's your week gone so far?
You know what? It's a beautiful day outside. I'm loving the nice weather. We're going outside a lot, taking lots of walks. Love it.
Well, that's great. I would love to go outside, but I have a little bit of a problem, and let me tell you what the problem is. So here's the problem. I got a copy of a new book. The book is called A Wonderful Guy by the great Eddie Shapiro, who's our guest today. And I thought, okay, I will go and I'll read the introduction and I'll start to skim through it. And of course, 3 hours later, I finished the entire book. So I have missed a beautiful day, but I've gotten so much knowledge in return. For those of you that don't know Eddie's work, you're probably familiar with his big work that came out before this, which is Nothing Like a Name, which is a fantastic book that came out in 2014, where he interviews all of these wonderful Broadway divas. And there are so many different books out there, but this is one that you need to have on your shelf. You've read it, Kevin, right?
We've talked. Oh, yeah. I mean, you could say it's like part of the inspiration for why we started the podcast, because, and, you know, Eddie goes into their poem, he gets the real story, the real good stuff. And the book is, we'll talk about this, but it's for me. It reads like an interview. So you really get insight, and it's not just opinions, and it's not just his point of view, but it's actually the point of view of these artists themselves, which makes it so special.
And the artists come off as so candid and so unfiltered. It's really, and we're going to talk to Eddie about that, but thank God Eddie has written a follow-up in some ways to this first book. The new book is called A Wonderful Guy, and it's following the great Broadway leading men of the past 30 or 40 years or so, from Joel Grey to Christian Borle. It's fantastic.
Ben Vereen.
And also unfiltered, very honest, and a really nice job of encapsulating modern musical theater and getting some nice scholarship on that as well. So I'm done praising the book for now. We'll be praising it throughout this interview, but we're happy to bring on with us the author of these two incredible books, the great Eddie Shapiro. Eddie, how are you today?
I'm overwhelmed by that introduction is how I am. A, you referred to me as great multiple times. B, you said that you read the book in 3 hours. And I'm like, how the hell did he do that? And C, I am, you said that the first book and, you know, inspired this podcast in some ways, which is both lovely and scary as hell, because, you know, your listeners might be like, you know, coming for me now. So
let them, Eddie. The books are fantastic. We're going to focus on A Wonderful Guy today because it's the newest one that just came out. And folks, if you click into our episode description, you can find a link to go and buy it on Amazon. And that way, you can have your own copy of it as well.
Yes.
So, Eddie, let's talk a little bit about you, though. First, where did you grow up? When did you first fall in love with theater?
I grew up in New York City, and I was very lucky to be taken to the theater from a very, very, very small age. My first Broadway show was actually The Magic Show, inauspicious, with, you know, Stephen Schwartz musical starring Doug Henning. But I also, in short order, like right in that same year, I also saw St. Joan starring Lynn Redgrave when I was 5. My mother asked me the question. She said, "Just so you know, what did you think?" And she says, And she's not a reliable reporter, so I can't necessarily say that this quote's accurate, but she says that I said I didn't understand a word of it, but I loved every minute. Sounds about right. And I do have the playbill, so I know I was there.
Yes, there's proof. There's proof. Man. And did you have any desire to get on stage yourself at some point after seeing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was an actor for many years. I trained at Tisch School of the Arts and I'm not even a frustrated actor. I was quite happy doing it. It's too long of a story to get into, but I did pause for a minute while I was out in LA and I started working for the AIDS Walk out there because I was sort of called to, not by Jesus or anything, but by literally a phone call. And I ended up staying, not knowing that it was going to be as good a match of person to job as it was. So I ended up in the event world, but still obviously kept my heart and at least my keyboard in the world of the theater.
Love that. All right. So, Eddie, you've had this amazing career of seeing so many wonderful shows. What is in your top three that have you
seen? Yeah! That's a terrible question.
The old top three question.
The old top three.
But
I'll even, to Eddie, I'll even take a performance that is so iconic it still stays with you to this day.
Mm-hmm. No, I can actually give you a top three, although it is the top three of today, meaning that, like, you know, this has everything
to do with
what I've eaten and if the moon is in Sagittarius or whatever. but I'd say the original Michael Bennett production of Dreamgirls blew me away like nothing else. And I mean, I remember where I was sitting. I remember line readings. Like, it's that, embedded in my brain. Also, the original production of Ragtime blows me. Is profanity okay here?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. We're not at, yes.
The fuck away. That's
Ragtime,
just Jesus Christ. And if we're going for classics, it's My Fair Lady. Just the construction of My Fair Lady and the score is stunning to me, although King and I is a close second. And also, I know you only said three, but I can't not say Chorus Line because it's Chorus Line.
Yeah.
Great. Good choice. All good choices. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So, Eddie, what inspired you to write? Is it okay if I call them a series of books that once focused on female
women? Because there's a third one coming. So there's that. That is officially a series.
Okay. Cool. Now, wait a minute. Can you tell us what the third one is?
I can. This is probably getting ahead, but I handed in the manuscript for a wonderful guy on June 1st of 2020. And when I handed in that manuscript, I thought to myself, okay, we're in this pandemic. I need function and I need purpose rather than just, you know, accruing a big Netflix wish list. So I decided to write another volume on the women because there were more women out there that I wanted to hit. And I broke my own rule. For the first two books, I insisted on doing these only in person. But with the pandemic, I said, all right, now I'm going to allow this to happen via Zoom, not just because that's the only way we can do it, but also I thought, I'm available, but so are all of these actors. What made these last two books take so long was scheduling. Because I'm bi-coastal, because they're working, because these conversations go on for hours and hours and hours. So it's frequently multiple sessions. So doing it via Zoom made it possible so I'm now halfway through a next volume.
Can you tell us anybody who's going to be included in the next volume?
I can tell you that people like Jesse Mueller and Kelly O'Hara and Carly Carmelo and Judy Kuhn and Karen Olivo are in there. And then there are a couple of holdovers from the last book, most notable of which is Barbara Cook.
You finally get to put it in there. You get to finally get use to put it.
Yep. I had done a Barbara Cook interview she was actually the inspiration for Nothing Like a Dame, listening to her stories in her cabaret set. And I really wanted to capture them. So she was the inspiration. But then when it came time to publish, she had decided to do her own autobiography. So she asked me not to include the chapter. But now that book has sort of run its course, her book, I did get permission from her son to run this chapter, which I think is a most excellent chapter.
That's incredible. Incredible.
That's exciting.
Okay, Eddie, so I'll go back. I'm sorry, I got off topic. So I'll go back to the first question, which was, what was the inspiration at the beginning of all
I just told you
to go back and get, well, okay, but no, okay, so let me ask you this.
Barbara
so
she's Cook up, concert. She told so great she, stories.
Okay, so she's up there every night telling her stories. There's tons of interviews with her. Why did you feel like that you needed to codify that and put that out there?
Because I always felt, and thank you, that is in fact the excellent question that leads us to the right place. I always felt like there were never enough. You'd sit there in a for example, a Barbara Cook concert, and she'd tell some great anecdote about being in the room with Leonard Bernstein or what Julie Stein said to her as she was walking on stage. And it's just enough to get you, you know, it's like watching a preview. And you're like, I want the whole movie, you
right,
know?
Right, right.
I would hunger. And, you know, you'd read, you point out that there are plenty of interviews out there, but no matter what I read, you read a story in Playbill or in the Arts and Leisure section or whatever, and it's something, it's usually related to the most current project, but it never dives in with the depth that I wanted. One of the real decisions, I guess, that I made about this book from the get-go is that I wanted career-encompassing conversations. That's how these were going to be different from anything that I had read before. I wanted to cover every single show that people had done. And I also really wanted to focus on, and this was some of my criteria and who to choose for these books, but people who had full careers in musical theater. So people like Julie Andrews, I mean, we all love Julie Andrews, of course, but Julie Andrews does a couple of musicals and goes off to a different kind of career, didn't qualify. Or people like Alan Cumming, who obviously iconic in Cabaret, but Cabaret and Three Penny Opera mark his two Broadway musicals. So not what I was looking for, you know, a full career on the musical stage.
So let's talk a little bit about A Wonderful Guy. And I'm so taken by the dedication of the book. Can you walk us through who you dedicated this book to?
Thank you for noticing that. Some of them are probably because I was sort of tricky and only using first names. But I felt so strongly that this book, I grew up reading and poring over books like this one, and poring over liner notes of cast albums that I would get from the libraries. And these were my holy materials. So there are iconic people who I didn't get to, because they died, before I had the opportunity. So that first book is dedicated to the likes of Ethel and Mary and Pearl and Gwen and Gertrude and Dolores. And this one, to people like, John and Richard, and Robert, and I'm talking about John Raitt and Richard Kiley and Robert Preston and Alfred Drake, and John McMartin, who had actually said yes to being in this book and then died before I got to interview him. But so the people who passed that make up the legacy, not just for me and my passion, but are the mentors for all of the men who appear in the book.
Exactly. And not only is it dedicated to them, but it's also dedicated to all of those that might have been included in this book.
Yes.
Had a plague not gone through.
Yes. Thank you for mentioning that. And I feel strongly about that too. You know, there are actors like David Carroll, who God knows what kind of work he would have continued to do.
He was my favorite, my all-time favorite.
Really?
My absolute favorite voice, favorite performer. Yes. Every time we bring him up on the podcast, I'm a happy person. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Eddie. I just love
to, interrupt away because I'll babble. I don't know if you've noticed. Talking very recently to Judy Kuhn about him and how, Judy Kuhn will well up in tears just at the mention of his name because he was such an ideal leading man to work with and so generous on stage. I mean, so people like that we lost. And then there's a third part of the dedication too, as you know, which is those who are yet to come, because I remain ever hopeful that there is a generation out there who will, if not my future volumes, be somebody's future volumes.
Yes. Oh, that's such a great way of looking at
it.
So when did you start? What was your first interview for this book and what year did that take place?
For this one, for Wonderful Guy, I started with Norm Lewis because he was, because Norm Lewis is a friend of mine. So he was like the easiest ask. I mean, literally.
hates talking.
Yeah, hates talking. But literally, I was like at his house and I'm like, I'm turning this on and we're going to start. Like, it was just great, sort of totally. Like, and it started, I want to say 2016 was the first interview. And then I, you know, but I sort of then was not, I will tell you a confession here. I slowed down on this book. I did not have it for whatever reason. I wasn't driven to just go with it until one day I woke up and I was.
Yep.
And then I was. And I was suddenly ready to attack it and ready to dive in. And I can't tell you what the differential was, but I was suddenly ready. So yeah.
Did you have that light up moment? Not during the pandemic, before that, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It was, I want to say, you know, right when I, you know, I started doing interviews again in earnest. And I honestly don't remember the date, but the interviews are all dated in the book. So yeah, you can tell.
I love that.
If you look, you can look where they suddenly start fluttering in again.
Right. Found it.
Who was the hardest person to get for A Wonderful Guy?
The hardest ones, the ones who said no. and I'll tell you, you know, there are a couple who I courted very, very hard, and inexplicably said no.
Kevin, why did you say no to Eddie?
You know what? The numbers of men who've said no to me.
There it is.
Good company. The one that so there's one who I really wanted and I knew I wasn't going to get, and that was Nathan Lane. Mm-hmm. because Nathan Lane is, what is that word I'm looking for? An asshole. So I knew Nathan Lane was not. And in fact, when I asked Nathan Lane this question in person, I asked him about this book and he said, no. And I said, literally with that tone, and I said, well, you know, perhaps I'll leave a copy for you with your publicist and you have Nothing Like a Dame and you can take a look. And he said, no.
Wow.
And I said, yeah, it was literally that. And I tried with flowers. I have full courtship, but you know, I wasn't really expecting it. But two people who I really, really wanted to, actually three come to mind, both Danny Burstein and Brian D'Arcy James. Both I courted hard but neither one is super comfortable talking about themselves. Huh. I mean, you know, Danny Burstein writes, but he's very much in control of the narrative.
Yeah.
So they weren't great about talking with them about themselves. And Andre DeShields was somebody who I courted hard and ultimately said that he thought about, you know, he really thought about it. And he's like, you know, I'm not really interested in being something that celebrates the cult of personality. And I thought, well, he's either I've misrepresented this book or he's misunderstanding this book, but in any event, he's passing. So okay. They passed.
Fascinating.
And Eddie, you were making direct reach outs to these people, or did you have to go through channels? Okay.
I reach out directly because I have had to take nothing away from all of the good people who work very, very hard to be representatives. When you are not offering money, which I am not, these people aren't especially invested in my needs. And having that middle person is frequently more cumbersome than needs to be the case. Sometimes, occasionally, people will ask me to start out talking to their rep, and then we ultimately end up one-on-one. But more often than not, it's just one-on-one, which it helps knowing people who are willing to put in a word on my behalf or whatever, so that, you know, because they don't know me from Adam, but
right. Of course, no, it helps when you have another book and you know,
you've got a little, helps. You know,
that does help. There. No, that yeah. totally helps.
And the fact that I put out also helps a lot.
That's great. Yeah. Yeah. Puts that in with the original request, which is such a smart.
Really, Kevin, help we need the lane switch. Help me get to the lane switch. Yeah.
You hear that, Kevin? This is how we need to be getting to people.
Harder. You got
to
work harder.
No, nobody wants to see me. They'll see you first. So you have 19 guys in this book, right?
Yes.
Do you think that there might be a sequel to this book down the road, the same way that you have for Nothing Like a Dame? Or do you feel like you've covered the guys you need to cover?
I don't know. I mean, look, if Andre DeShields or Danny Burstein or Brian D'Arcy James changed their minds, then yes, of course I would be right on top of that. And I would justify another book for it. But it's true that when I did Nothing Like a Dame, people like Stephanie Block and Jesse Mueller and Karen Olivo wouldn't have qualified for that first book and do now. So who knows what's coming down the pike.
Do you think with all the guys that you've interviewed for this book, there's a thread that runs through all of them, or there's something that's consistent? I know when you were talking about your Nothing Like a Dame, you said insecurity seemed to be something that ran through all of the women.
Yes, and where did you read that?
Playbill?
Yeah, there's a brief encounter.
That's Playbill. Okay, interesting. Because I was like, that's what I was going to say here. And I was like, you already know the answer. Teepers. Thanks for
doing our research.
We hacked into your computer. We've seen emails. Yeah. We know. Is it the same thing for the guys as well as it was for the dames?
Yes, with another element to it. So insecurity, and I say that in the best possible way. You know, I don't think of insecurity as a pejorative word. I think insecurity is real, and a willingness to show insecurity is real. But it just surprised me so much in Nothing Like a Dame, particularly because I hadn't done, you know, that was the first one. And thinking about all of these people who have really hit the pinnacle, made it to the top, have Tony Awards, and yet they still have these insecurities. The men, same deal, but also I will add to that the men were, funnily enough, or perhaps not so, far more candid about money. Mm. People talked about finances much more than the women did.
Wow, yeah.
Finances in terms of like what they're getting paid, or finances in terms of?
Well, a little of that, but more about the realities of the business in terms of its remuneration. When you're, one of the most, if you've read it, you already know this story, but one of the most striking things that hit me the hardest was hearing Norbert Leo Butz, two-time Tony Award winner Norbert Leo Butz, say that the realities of business are such that he cannot afford to do new musicals anymore because you spend so much time working, workshopping, doing presentations, playing out of town, years where you make no money. And then a musical like Big Fish, that's what we were talking about at the time, opens for 3 weeks. That's when you're supposed to finally get the payoff, and you don't, and he's got kids at home. Or, you know, you also, if you read it, you read Will Chase's chapter where he is so, so frank about having familial responsibilities, the money that he can make on television, and that being just a very, very real consideration, no matter how much he loves the theater. So a lot of people talking about that kind of thing. Although flip side of that is I sort of made an assumption by the time I got to Jonathan Groff that he was sort of not doing stage work as much as some of the others because of money and fame and, you know, and career stuff. And that's not what he says. He says, you know, he actually is very happy and comfortable. You know, it's amazing how much Christoph will pay for. But so that gave him the opportunity to work in all different mediums, and he really liked the challenge of bouncing around between them. So it wasn't just money with him. And when I say just money, again, that sounds pejorative. But it was a theme that surprised me, the candor with which people talked about the realities of the business in terms of money.
Yeah. What surprised you the most about, or what interview surprised you the most?
Surprised.
Or you had a preconceived notion about the person going into the room.
Right, but completely different, which when you get to know them. And you go to their homes, too, which is wild that you actually see. You know, when we've done interviews with some of our legends, it's when we get to, you know, do it over Zoom, it's one thing. But when you walk in their house and you're a guest, sort of, you really are immersed in it a little bit more.
It's lovely that they trust me that way. The people who probably surprised me the most, Christian Borle is so smart, and such a thinker, and a careful thinker, you know, when he's antic on stage, you sort of think, I mean, you hear this all the time about comics, so it really shouldn't surprise us. But, you know, you hear that Lucille Ball was not especially funny off of screen. We hear it all the time. But still, I was surprised because I expected a different kind of energy. And his energy, completely warm, lovely, not, you know, but just not trying to entertain me, not right. trying to be funny, you know. And so that was a surprise. And perhaps less of a surprise. Sometimes also going along with surprise or sort of when people do present exactly as you hope they will, you know, like Angela Lansbury making me tea or Elaine Stritch being, you know, cantankerous as all hell. Michael Server is sort of, you know, sitting on the couch super close and talking really quietly, you know, back and forth with, I mean, it's just, it's
that's exactly what, how I expected.
Right. It's what you'd hope for. and it's magical.
Oh,
you know,
I love it. Yeah. Yeah.
Kevin, do you want
and
to?
And I wonder if that's how.
Sorry,
yeah, and I
monopolizing
that's,
the conversation.
No. It's so good, Robbie. Such good questions. No. But I imagine then that must be a way that you get some of these deeper truths out of them too. Because what impressed me is that, you know, we know from these doing interviews as well that you can ask like the nice things, but you do ask some of the questions that pertain to the darker things too. I mean, you know, Ben Vereen, you know, you had to, you know, you're going to talk about some things that happened in his life that aren't so wonderful. Now, do you plan on that? Do you let the conversation naturally go that direction? Or do you know you're going to ask them about like some of the more serious things in their
I always know that I'm not going to shy away from anything.
Great.
But that's how I am all the time. I mean, that's how I am on a date.
Yeah, like, well, yeah. And an interview actually as well. So it's good.
Why I'm single, by the way. But,
you hear that, folks? You hear that?
Oh, sorry. Right, exactly.
Swipe right for Eddie.
But, I feel like I will always take the temperature of the room and see what I can get away with. And it's never thinking about the gotchas. It's because I'm never going for a gotcha. It's about the, are you comfortable enough to go here? Yeah. I get asked that question a lot, you know, how do you get them to open up so much? And I can't be objective about the answer. I can only say that, I'm lucky enough that they do. Yes. And I'm incredibly grateful for their trust and their candor because, they really, bar none, everybody who's appeared in both of these books has been so, so generous with their stories.
And other than Barbara, you know, did any, and that was for a good reason because she had her own book coming out. Did anybody, you know, say, you know what, I'm sorry, the chat we had, I don't want you to publish that. Cause yeah. We've had that once or twice with interviews and that we were surprised, but it was, they just on second thought. Pulled back.
I don't mind saying it out loud because I'm angry about it. but I don't mind saying it out loud because you know I'm trying to convince her otherwise. I can't be inside of her head. But I did a full chapter on Christine Ebersole, she read it. She asked to read it, and I will always give people that opportunity because I want to make sure that they feel, if they want it, that they feel like what they've said, that I've captured it in the way they want to represent, not because we're whitewashing, but because sometimes in a conversation, especially, you know, I spent 14 hours with Patti LuPone. That gets edited into a chapter. And when it's edited, sometimes it doesn't right. necessarily read in exactly the way she intended. So anytime somebody wants to read it, I am happy to share that and take their notes. Christine Ebersole's response was that she did not feel that she was coming off as intelligently as she wanted to. And I tried hard to convince her to, well, then let's fix that.
Right.
She didn't want to go back. She didn't want to do it. So I have this fully done chapter, which by the way, I think she sounds plenty intelligent in, but she didn't want me to run it.
And like you said, everyone who, after you've put the chapter together, do they have final approval over what goes into that book?
If they ask for it.
If they ask for it.
Right. So there are a few people, like I said, I don't say no to anybody who asks, but there are plenty of people who don't ask. And then when people don't see their own chapters, I send them stuff if I think it's incendiary. I'll send them a note that says, by the way, Patti LuPone, you said, I did this. I said, you said this, this, and this. Are you sure you want these things in print? And she said, sure.
Of course she did. Yes, she did.
Did you find the dames to be more honest and candid than the gentlemen?
No, I did not. Mm. I found them. I mean, actually, you know what? Again, we're talking about our own perception of honest and candid, because who knows what they held back. Mm-hmm. If we take them all at face value, then no. So, you know, one of the, I think, rawest of the interviews was actually Raul Esparza. I think that he I love that chapter because he's not afraid to talk about, to own how great he is, and at the same time talk about his demons. Mm. I found them equally open, although I did have a preconceived notion that the women were going to be more open, and that was not true.
And then for this guy book, you don't have to give any names, but was there anyone that you interviewed and after the interview you thought, this is not going to add anything to the book. I'm going to have to walk away from this. We can always cut this out also. I'm just curious.
There isn't any person that I felt like, no, this is not going to add anything. But there are certainly stories or conversations. And as they're happening, you're going, oh, brother. it's not totally. That the person himself or herself is not interesting. It's that they've wandered off the reservation and they're on a story that, you know, and I never, ever, ever redirect when somebody's in the middle of a story, because you never know, mm-hmm. they might be coming around to something that's going to prove relevant, or there's going to be a sentence in there. And again, part of them feeling listened to so that they feel trusted is me not cutting them off. Yeah. But sometimes I will hear literally an hour's worth of material, and the whole time I'm thinking none of this is making it in the book, but that's how that goes.
Yep. So, it is. That's showbiz. Yeah.
One of our last questions for you. So let's imagine that you've got this time machine and you can go back and you can talk to one of these wonderful guys that did not live long enough to be in the book. So you can pick one of them for us. And what do you really, really want to ask that one person? So let's imagine you get Robert Preston, the Ouija board gets him for 2 minutes. What's the one question you're going to ask him?
If I literally have a time machine, then I think I would start by telling them about what Broadway is like now, and then say John Raitt, perhaps more than Robert Preston, who went from show to show to show and had creators like Rodgers and Hammerstein writing, things for him. Mm-hmm. To be able to say that this is what it looks like now. What do you think of that?
So, Eddie, once again, the book is absolutely fantastic. Everyone, you need to have it on your bookshelves. It's called A Wonderful Guy. Once again, click into our episode description and you will be able to click a link and purchase the book for yourself or a loved one. Give it out to them as well. It's fantastic. Eddie, absolutely, we can't wait to see when the sequel to Nothing Like a Dame. Do you know what that's going to be called? Nothing Like a Dame Part 2? What is it?
I'm calling it It Takes a Woman.
Lovely. Lovely.
Yeah, I couldn't. Unfortunately, I was out of South Pacific song titles. Calling it Belly High wasn't going to get me anywhere. I thought about Happy Talk, but it wasn't specific enough.
Right. So. I understand. Eddie, when that book comes out, I hope you'll join us again.
If you'll have me again after this, I will show up.
Please. We would love that. All right, everyone, go buy A Wonderful Guy. It's fantastic by the great Eddie Shapiro. Until next time, bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone. Thanks, Eddie.
Thank you.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the Rise Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RiseTheatre.org, because only together we rise.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.